Simpson back to center wing. Pike and Worsfold again combined. Into the middle. It's a game of possession now with only seconds remaining. Evans may have the last kick in this grand final. The Eagles are going to win their first leg.
There's the 1992 Grand Final and the final moments of it called beautifully by Sandy Roberts, as always. SEN Breakfast for Melbourne Airport Valet. Simply drive up and hand us the keys and we'll take care of the rest. Guy McKenna, our special guest in the studio this morning. So bring back some pretty fond memories, Bluey.
Yeah, well, fond memories too because of the bloke that just got commentated on having that last kick, Tony Evans. I mean, he kicked two just before half-time. Which put us two goals down at half-time. If he hadn't kicked those two, I think he intercepted one from a kick-in. And it was a turnover in there. So that made it 6-8 going into half time. And he was sort of that underrated player. We spoke about big game players. Well, we used to call him the mailman, apart from Little Piglet, because he didn't mind his tucker. But we used to call him the mailman because in big games he would deliver, and he certainly delivered in 92.
Hey, Bluey, do you think you have to pay your dues? Like, we often talk about the fact, you know, you've got to get there a few times before you understand what it's all about. Talking about the Brisbane Lions this year. You know, they haven't really, you know, for a lot of people, they haven't paid their dues. They've played some tough games, that type of thing. But they haven't been there before. They don't really understand what the final month of football is all about. The West Coast Eagles got into the finals in 90.
Yep. 90.
Yep. And then again in 91. And then it wasn't until 92 that you actually saluted. Yeah. So can you talk about that build up to that?
Yeah, well, certainly, I mean, 90, I mean, just the euphoric nature of West Coast, although they'd played in 88 too, my first year. We got in the a final and got beaten by Melbourne, of course, and then fell away, and then coaches got sacked and all that sort of stuff. And then Mick came in 1990 and just turned the joint around. And, yeah, we stormed into finals. That was all fantastic. We're all playing State of Origin. We're all playing, obviously, the home and away series, and then sort of basically ran out of gas in 1990. And obviously there was some drawn finals and flight issues and all that sort of stuff. It made it really tough. And then 91, we stayed on. We started the season well and we stayed number one for the whole season, won 19 games.
Yeah, you were three games clear at the end of the home and away season on top of the ladder.
Yeah.
And so what happened in that final series?
And you talk about learnings. I reckon that's the club and the players themselves. And again, you talk about winning a grand final. I don't subscribe naturally to the theory that you have to lose one to not understand how to win one. But again, my experiences from 91, we're 10 points down against Hawthorn. We didn't come over for the grand final parade. We sat in WA in the pressure cooker. You know, you could see like my old mum's pressure cooker going off, and we weren't allowed to speak to the media. You know what Mick was like and all that.
Hang on, just back up there. So you didn't come across to the grand final parade?
No.
Well, that must have been a big story at that time.
Oh, massive. And it was all around our routine because we're the first interstate club to come over and potentially take the cup back from the Victorians back to WA. So, yeah, so we weren't changing our routine. I remember Mick and Trevor Nisbet at the time just arguing black and blue, and, you know, headlines every day was we're going, we're not going, all that sort of stuff, which, again, as a player, we just knew Mick and Nizzy were going to fix it. Well, either way, we probably backed them in to say, well, I reckon we're not going.
Yeah.
We're just going to stay here and train. So it was all around our routine to Melbourne, which was... You know, if we're playing a Saturday game and it was grand final, it's Friday morning, we train, we start at 8:30, rub the sleeping men out of your eyes, get to Subiaco, 9 o'clock training, finish by 10, on the plane by 11:20, and we're in Melbourne by 4 o'clock, and that was always going to happen. So we did that 91, so we sort of lived in that bubble and a pressure cooker. 92 comes around, and everything's just let free. We come over Wednesday, we'd never done it before, we was able to speak to everyone, you know, during the, well... Until Monday.
had you trialled that during the year, during your travel, though? Had you actually changed your travel arrangements during the year, or did you just change it again on grand final week?
Yeah, only that week. We may have come over, well, I don't think we ever did, like on a Wednesday. We may have come over 2 days early, but certainly not the Wednesday, and to train at the MCG as well. So that was half a mixed reason. He said, well, we can go over early. We're happy to do the parade, but why go over early? We're not going to be allowed on the MCG to train, so what's the point? But... I think that was part of the negotiation, I think, behind the scenes, is we're able to train the MCG, so Mick pushed the button on that.
It's a really consolidative process now when you look at, say, the interaction between coaches and leadership groups and that type of thing. Take us back to those days with Mick. Did you have a leadership group and did he listen to the leadership group or was it pretty much dictatorial?
No, he did. He'd always say, look, you know, my office door's always open. You know, you might come in talking white and I'm talking black. We'll go out hugging each other and we're talking grey. Well, that was never the case. you'd go in talking white and you'd come out talking black because he's a master of turning you around and thinking his way. But who? No, he had a, we had obviously a leadership group. Certainly, Woosher and Monkey Brennan led that, and we used to call them the Code Reds off a few good men. Not that we ever got the soap in the socks and did that, but if we had to call players in, we'd say, Mick, excuse me, can we use your office? We need to have a chat. And, you know, we, yeah, I said without naming names, but, you know, we had some real, when I say we started to grill some boys and they'd break down and, you know, we found some stuff out about some of our very own players and very good players through that process. And it was just earth shattering at the time just to find out this was going on behind the scenes and we didn't know anything about that. And it was, you know, to do with one of the, great players' partners and how all of a sudden he started to disappear away from training early and it just sort of almost became a recluse and his form had dropped off. And that's, again, from back in those days, mate, that's what we were concerned about was his output on the field. And it just wasn't his normal level. And we, you know, we started grilling him and saying, mate, you're being a bit disconnected. You're not doing this. You're not doing this around the club. He used to be the life of the show. And now, you know, and all of a sudden he's sort of just basically bled out what was going on at home with his partner. And we were just gobsmacked and almost embarrassed. You know, I still feel bad about not knowing and not asking those questions, you know, previously. So, yeah, it was, yeah, some of them were, or most of them were quite grueling and, and done in, obviously, all of them were done in the right manner. But, yeah, some of the information we'd find was, yeah, quite staggering.
Guy McKenna in the studio with us this morning. 267 games, Bluey, with the West Coast Eagles and a lot of travelling in amongst that too. It's relevant now because the Eagles are going to have to do this the hard way if they win it this year.
Yep.
How difficult is jumping on a four-hour flight every second week?
The first year was all new and exciting. I still remember Ash McIntosh buying. I've been to Sydney shirt when he got off the first time he played in Sydney. So into the little tourism shop there and bought that. And we thought, oh yeah, wow, okay, that's fair enough. Whatever floats your boat there, Ash. But anyway, so first year all new and exciting. Second year it's head in the hands. Just oh, here we go again. By the third and fourth, it's like Essendon driving out to Tullamarine or driving to Marvel Stadium. It just in hits and in autopilot. You get into your routine. So I've been asked about that, about, excuse me, West Coast this year. And I said, look, they're professionals now. We live in this professional era of doing it. And again, if anything, West Coast should manage it the best out of anyone because, and Fremantle, of course, that they made finals, but because they do it. They do it every second week. So they get that. Would it be an advantage to play at home? Of course it would, because you don't have to travel. But the fact they do it every second week, they're obviously masters at it.
Is it a disadvantage, though, at this time of the year? Like, would they be feeling internally that they lost their opportunity to win this flag this year after losing that last home-and-away game against Hawthorn?
Oh, I don't think they lost their, well, opportunity to win it, but it's...
they've still got the opportunity, but their best chance of winning a grand final.
Yeah, I have to say, it would be a better chance if they played at home for the first leading up to finals and then played a grand final in Melbourne, no question. But again, the difference maybe back in the early 90s, it would be a 25% chunk off your chances. But this year in the modern world and the modern age of recovery, mate, maybe 5%, you know, because they do it, you know. But because they manage it so well, Timmy, as you know, ice bars and recovery and sitting up at the pointy end and all that sort of stuff for the plane. We're a little bit different when we would do it. We're down the cattle class and the fruit and all that sort of stuff being handed around and the air around sort of some of those trips down the back end of the plane. Wow. But, things are a lot different these days.
I haven't been coached by Sheeds, and I think that, you know, you spent a lot of time in your career having been coached by Mick Malthouse. I mean, both legends of coaching in this game. And I think there's a similarity between the two men in terms of the way that they were able to get this us against them type mentality developing within the group. Was that Mick's...
Oh, no question.
Number one?
Yeah.
Style in the way that he went about things?
Yeah, anything to do with a game, if it was against Hawthorn, it was because some AFL director was an ex-Hawthorn person, which we didn't even know. I mean, he'd mention names, we'd be sitting looking at him going, who is that? Like, we wouldn't even know that he's an AFL commissioner or, you know, anyone. I went, what? Isn't he Hawthorn? Right. And I'm sure he was making some blokes' names up, and he used to play for this club, and the reason, you know, we'd be playing at a certain ground and all this sort of stuff. Yeah, he was very much us versus them, and he was a master at it. Yep. I mean, we'd look around the room and some of our former greats of WA, Ian Miller, played for Fitzroy East Perth. He was a chairman of selectors, certainly a selector. He'd be sitting there and standing there in tears because Mick would be peeling the paint off the walls and all that sort of stuff. And it's us and the competition don't want us in here. We had to pay $4 million to get into the competition. He'd be just going through the whole box and dice just to wind us up. And it was funny. And I remember one game, it was a final, I think it was against Geelong actually at Waverley. And he was going around the room and he was fired up. And Ian Miller's in tears. We saw, you're right, this is hitting the spot. And we're you know, hanging off every word of Mick. And then, you know, he turns to some players, what are you going to do today? And it's about your first contest. And he turned to David Hart and said, and what are you going to do, David? What does your teammates want from you? And he looked up at Mick and we're all waiting for, you know, we're hanging ready, charging, you know, gripping each other and holding out, you're ready to burst out the doors. And he said, I'm going to try really hard. Yeah, and I think I still got the stitches in my finger because I was biting my finger. I was in the back row and I'm going, what? Really? You're going to try really hard? And then Mick couldn't help himself. He said, what? Try really hard? You're going to give us more than that, David, surely. You know, okay, I'm going to try really, really hard. You know? Oh, we just burst out. I had tears running down my eyes. I pushed Ian Miller out the way. I was just like George Costanza in that fire episode of the Seinfeld, you know. I just couldn't help myself. And mind you, we hung on and won, so we all talked and joked and laughed about it afterwards. But
was he a theme man as well, Mick? Did he like to develop a theme around the finals or around parts of the year to try and keep it a little bit more interesting?
Yeah, it's sort of leading up to the game, he was very good. And he was very good for me because I was I like to be sort of a little bit. I used to like to try and lower the mood a bit, if you know what I mean, because footy's so high pressure and stuff. So I used to be fines master and do all those sorts of things. And I used to say we had a window of 15 minutes for the week where we could have a laugh and a joke. Well, that was during the fines and all that sort of stuff. And then Mick was on task, but he was very good on during the week on task about you. So he'd come up and say, right, I'm playing on Mark Mercurio, I'm playing on Tim Watson. This is what he is. Yep. And he just know you back inside out because of the opposition work that was done. And so he'd make it about you privately, about your opponent. Very good at that. But then as game day fronted in our last training session, there was more around the group. So he'd never really identify an individual like he did with David Hart before that final, but he'd more then bring it back on the team and then bring it about the us versus them mentality. Why are we at Waverley? Isn't that a surprise we're playing Geelong at Waverley? Why is that? You know, well, generally that's the rules, Mick, isn't it? You know, but he'd make it some story up about some AFL directors pushed it out here because it's further for us to travel and all that sort of stuff. We should be at the MCG, all that sort of stuff. He was very good at that.
You talk about playing on Tim Watson. Would you have liked to have played with Tim Watson?
Speaking of my role, I was the fines. I do tell this story, and I know Tim, he can't deny it, but he came over in that 93 year.
It was late in the year, though.
Yeah.
Very late in the year.
Oh, very late. And so for that was the reason, and I was the fines master. So we used to get, as I said, that 15 minutes window of opportunity for us to smile at West Coast under Mick, because I used to fine blokes. I used to fine blokes for if you got caught bleeding on the ground, we thought that was a sign of weakness. So you used to get fined, you know, for blood noses or scratches. Stitches were $1.
Yeah, okay.
Back in the day, but then when GST came in, we had to whack them up to $2. Yeah. Mickey Dunstan had a plate put in his arm. He had 40 stitches, which became $80. So all that sort of stuff. And then Timmy Watson came over late in the year, and he was on our books, of course. Mick only, I think, just to put one up, Sheeds, of course, recruited Timmy Watson. Never saw him at training, so obviously there was penalties for not turning up at training. So Timmy fronted us, and Mick got him out, and Timmy was fantastic. He was having a chat to the boys and, you know, sorry, boys, haven't been at training. I said, yeah, and I had to, sorry, Tim, if you don't mind. I've looked at your fine sheet, mate. It's about $1,500. The spooky thing was he put his hand into his pocket and he pulled out this wad of Hawaii 5-0s. And I reckon there's a little bit more than $1,500 in his pocket too. So it must have been a very good cash he was over for.
I was in no condition to be playing at that stage, though.
I mean, obviously we didn't, you know, as I said, it was probably not, it certainly wasn't done as a joke. I mean, Mick was serious about having someone with finals experience. You talk about that. So I'm sure there was something from a football point of view behind it, but I think there was certainly a little bit of a percentage just so Mick could get one over a Sheedy.
Guy McKenna's here with us, 267 games for the Eagles, two-time club champion, three-time All-Australian, two-time premiership player, captain of the club. Hall of Fame inductee, what a resume, Wisp.
Yes, and we're going to talk about John Worsfold when we come back as well. I know he's a great mate of yours, and it's been an interesting year for John, but also talk about the days that he was one of the great leaders in the AFL of the West Coast Eagles too.
SEN Breakfast for Abercrombie and Kent, the greatest luxury adventures on earth. 25 past 7, SEN Breakfast. Tim Watson, Jack Heverin in for Gary Lyon this morning. Guy McKenna, our special guest in the studio. Heath Scotland to join us shortly. Seb Ross, St Kilda's best and fairest winner, to join us very shortly as well. Tim?
And this text just came through. Pete from Geelong wants to know why you're talking to a West Coast past player when Geelong is the only Victorian team playing this weekend. Are you going to interview anyone from Geelong? Well, Pete, we are. We're going to talk to Tommy Hawkins a little bit later in the program. So your wish is our command.
Ask and you shall receive, Peter. Thank you. Hey, Blue, we were talking about John Worsfold before the break. It's been seems like a challenging year. Would that be a fair description?
Yeah, well, certainly. I mean, obviously players coming in and then injuries and all that sort of stuff. And it's no, you know, I mean, every club goes out. And if you get the, and again, you can have a lot of injuries, but if the injuries to your key personnel and obviously a couple of key forwards of Essendon have missed, it's only natural. But I still always look at the games played on average in the squad per player. And Gold Coast were, you know, they're almost 20th on the ladder, although there's, you know, 18 sides, but they were that far behind everyone else. And there was a group of five clubs, and surprise, surprise, St Kilda in that. Essendon were in that, Melbourne were in that as well. So when you're bringing out a player that's injured and you replace him with another player, on average, that's the player it's going to go in. And they were like numbers of 50. So it's like a 50 gamer going in. The older clubs are around 79. Now, I know that doesn't sound a lot, but to get your average player up to 79, that's years in the competition. And so Essendon, by nature, then, and I always say, so when you look at that ladder, the top six are generally in the top six. They finish there. And generally the bottom six will be the bottom six because they're the most inexperienced players going around. So it sort of marries up. But I think what he's been able to do since what happened at Essendon and to get them back into two finals, I think in 3 or 4 years now.
Four years.
Oh, remarkable. Remarkable.
What as a leader, what made him a great captain, John Worsfold?
It wasn't a very vocal one. Michael Brennan was certainly the foghorn, leghorn regarding that. So he'd be the voice piece. But Woosha, when he spoke, he said, didn't mince his words, but when he spoke, everyone listened. And he would then go back up word for word. And you could almost see him put the full stop on, you know, like the hit on Dermot.
Yep.
He and Couchy had some run-ins. You talk about Geelong in those days.
He didn't miss many, Bob.
Oh, no. And when he hit hard. But I said, I'm surprised I haven't got bored in the back of my head. But no one... And he was a South Fremantle boy, I was Claremont, so we never really knew each other until the Teal Cup back in those days, the under-18. So, and then we became close, or I became close to the South Fremantle boys out of that sort of Claremont era, or a Claremont group of players. So we sort of started to hit it off, but no one would do man-on-man with him. So I had the two worst, but it was fantastic for my footy. So Louis, so it was always a Louis and Bluey, at, you know, okay, we're having some training sessions, right, here's the back line, here's the forward line, Louis and Bluey, off you go. So I'd have to cut my teeth on Chris Lewis. So chasing him around was just fantastic for the creative and the way he used to see the game. And then from the physical component, because us Claremont boys, Timmy, weren't renowned for our brutality, if you like.
Right.
We like to play a very fair game, one out and one back. So a lot of times we had to do one-on-one and everyone would sort of bend down and start doing their shoelaces up when it was Woosher was standing around with his hands on his hips. Or, oh, who's going to come with me? And it was me that had to do it, but I was about a yard quicker. But the whooshing and the hair pulling and all that sort of stuff from behind, I reckon I just missed out because I was just that bit quicker than Woosher. But he was frightening.
It was very much the one-on-one defender. On the other hand, probably pioneered the art of being able to be the zoning type defender. That's not being disrespectful. I mean, you did it unbelievably well, but I can imagine the lock-on defenders were at times thinking, come on, Bluey, pick up your man. Why aren't you on this bloke over here?
I used to get a lot of feedback from my teammates. and even then, I don't know whether I taught Jacko, Glenn Jakovic, he pioneered the actually sitting a kick ahead of the play. I used to think I could do the one behind the play really well. He did the one in front of the play as a defender, mind you. But, yeah, it was. And I understand why Mick used to get so frustrated with me because of that. And I sort of used to see the game and I go, well, they're not going to kick it there. Well, that's probably where they're going to kick it. The pressure's on. Well, I'm going to go over there and all that sort of stuff. So I used to say I was the smart one. All those dopey defenders used to have to play on someone else so I could just zone off. But you get found out. And when I got found out, that's when I used to get the runner come out to me, that's for sure.
Let's take us back, if you can, to 1990, that drawn final at Waverley. Peter Sumich with the kick after the siren, and then you got to come back the next week. What was that like at the time?
Well, it's funny, right at that moment, I still remember it standing sort of on the half back on the wing, looking at Summer, and I'm going, come on, mate, banana, 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 banana. And then he spoke after the game where he just hits the drop punt, and he said it was just, he knew his window for error was so small, he had to hit a drop punt because he backed himself into, you know, because it was in the opposite for a left footer. It was and the wind was coming down the ground, so it was all the things against him. And he just wasn't, and he hadn't practiced it like the modern day player would practice banana inside and outside bananas to death at training. Whereas he didn't do a lot of that, so he would just practice that. So he nailed it. We got the draw. We're all sort of head down, just, geez, we've got to get on the kite. It was that year where we travelled about six times. Because back in those days, the draw was two games at home, two games away.
Yep.
So we'd finished two games away. I then came over for some finals as well. And then this was a drawn final, so we're head in the hands. And I still remember, and he's a great bloke, Fatty Lamb, but he still's probably got his first dollar. He was doing cartwheels down the middle of Waverley, and we're all just exhausted. Oh, we have to get on the bus, have to get back to the plane, and go back for a week of training and come back. He was jumping around because back in those days, there was no set salaries. You got game payments. Well, he's jumping around. Hey, boys, we get another match payment. boys, how good's this? And he was doing cartwheels. I'm like, Fatty, is that all you can think about? All you can think about is an extra match payment? Are you serious? But, I mean, he did redeem himself because you wouldn't happen in today's airport security, as we know. But I reckon after 92 when we won, there is a story. I didn't see it. So maybe folklore or myth, I don't know. But he actually, he got the cup and he went through the scanner holding it on. He wasn't going to let it go.
Blue, it's been great to have you in.
Great.
Thanks for coming in this morning. We really appreciate it. A tip for Friday night, West Coast and Geelong?
I'm tipping West Coast will play Richmond, and whoever wins that game will win the flag, and they'll probably play Collingwood.
Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
Been great. Thanks, Blue.
It's news time.